Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast. I'm Keith Caulfield, Senior Director of Billboard Charts.
And I'm Katie Atkinson, Billboard's Deputy Editor Digital.
Hello, Katie. How are you?
I'm doing great, Keith. Feels like a busy news music week.
Yes.
I think.
All of those things are happening. You've got BBMA news. We've got Grammy news. We've got a new number one on both the Hot 100 and the Billboard 200. Just a whole lot of stuff happening.
Just how we like it.
Yes. Because as always, thankfully, that's why we're here. The Billboard Pop Shop Podcast is your one-stop shop for all things pop on Billboard's weekly charts. In addition, you can always count on a lively discussion about the latest pop news, fun chart stats and stories, new music, and guest interviews with music stars and folks from the world of pop. Today on the show, we've got chart news about how The Weeknd's Save Your Tears, bolstered by a newly released remix with Ariana Grande, jumps to number one on the Billboard Hot 100 Songs chart, and how Moneybagg Yo lands his first number one album on the Billboard 200 chart with A Gangsta's Pain.
Plus, the finalists were announced for the 2021 Billboard Music Awards.
Woohoo!
And we've got all the details about the big show, including how it will be hosted by a friend of the podcast.
Hmm.
And in other award show news, we'll be joined by Billboard Awards editor Paul Grine to discuss the big Grammy Awards news of how they have disbanded the controversial nomination review committees and what it all means for the awards. But first, before we get started, if you enjoy the podcast, subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast provider so you won't miss an episode. And if you want to explore more podcasts from Billboard, visit billboard.com/podcasts.
Okay. Let's do the chart chat. First up, The Weeknd's Save Your Tears jumps from number 6 to number 1 on the Billboard Hot 100, giving The Weeknd his 6th leader on the tally. The surge to the top was prompted by the release of a new remix of the song with Ariana Grande. And Grande now gets chart credit for the song, as the new version drew the majority of the title's overall activity for the week. And it is also Grande's 6th number 1.
Wow.
Yeah. So congrats to both. Neither one of them have been on the podcast yet. Come on.
That's true. But we did do a whole podcast last week about what a perfect pair they are. And I would say this is confirmation of that.
See, here's the thing. They know both The Weeknd and Ariana listened to that show and thought they don't need us to come and do an interview.
We'll just do a whole show around you anyway.
Right. Well, following the April 23rd release of its remix with Grande, Save Your Tears, all versions combined, drew 30.4 million U.S. streams, up 111%, and sold 18,000 downloads, up 265%, in the week ending April 29th, according to MRC data. That's, of course, in the United States. It also attracted 67.3 million radio airplay audience impressions. That was up 5% in the week ending May 2nd. And with all that activity, the song jumps 19 to 1 on the digital song sales chart, 17 to 2 on the streaming songs chart, and holds at number 2 on the radio songs chart.
I would love to know when this remix was created, because it feels like it's like a game
ago.
Of double... Well, it feels like it's a game of double dutch sometimes where you're like waiting for your moment to like jump in. And like, I feel like, you know, seeing that it went up to number 6 last week, it's like they picked this perfect moment when it was primed to take it all the way to the top with this remix. And they clearly picked the right week.
Yeah, I think that's probably it. I mean, maybe there were people that knew, it's like, oh, we know Lil Nas X is coming. We know Polo G is coming.
Mm-hmm.
How do we dodge and weave around these things? And sometimes you pick the right week and sometimes you don't.
You don't.
Well, as for the rest of the top 5 on the Hot 100 this week, Silk Sonic's Leave the Door Open holds at number 2. By the way, Silk Sonic was an example of that. Silk Sonic's track came out the same week that Drake dropped some surprise songs. So I think maybe Silk Sonic thought they were going to debut at number 1 that week. They had to wait a few weeks to get to number 1. So the same thing could have happened with Ariana and The Weeknd. Even if it hadn't been this week, maybe it still could have been number 1 at some point later.
Yeah.
So Leave the Door Open holds at number 2 on the Hot 100 this week, while Justin Bieber's Peaches, featuring Daniel Caesar and Giveon, is also a non-mover at number 3. Polo G's Rap Star falls 1 to 4 in its third week on the chart. And Dua Lipa's Levitating, featuring DaBaby, is steady at number 5. Fun fact, as you've probably surmised if you listen to the show each week, the numbers 1, 2, 3, and 4 songs this week on the Hot 100 have all been at number one at some point in the past or currently.
How fun. How fun.
In fact, if you look at the entire top 10 this week, 7 out of the top 10 have all been number one songs.
I don't know if it's a moment? Record. I was going to say, has there ever been a moment when more than that many songs have been number one?
Go tweet Gary 10. Trust and find out.
Okay, that sounds like a perfect Billboard mailbag question.
Yes, we'll work on that later. Next up... Next up, over on the Billboard 200 albums chart, after notching 4 earlier top 10 albums, rapper Moneybagg Yo earns his first number one as his latest effort, A Gangsta's Pain, debuts atop the tally. The 22-track set earned 110,000 equivalent album units in the U.S. in the week ending April 29th, according to MRC data, and nearly all of that total is powered by streaming activity. So congrats to Moneybagg Yo. Last week's number one, the Young Thug-led Slime Language 2 album, falls to number two in its second week. Morgan Wallen's former number one, Dangerous, the double album, is a non-mover at number three. And Eric Church's Soul bows at number four. Now, Soul follows Church's top 10 debut a week ago with Heart, making Church the first act with back-to-back top 10 debuts in successive weeks since 2017, when Future debuted at number one in successive weeks with a self-titled album and Hendrix. And rounding out the top five on the Billboard 200 this week is Justin Bieber's former number one, Justice, which falls one spot.
We mentioned at the top of the show, the finalists for the 2021 Billboard Music Awards were announced last week, and news about the show has been coming fast and furious since then. So we wanted to kind of recap what you need to know about the show so far. First of all, The Weeknd, we might have already mentioned today, is this year's leading BBMA finalist with 16 nods. We did not snub The Weeknd.
Well, and also, we, Billboard, it's not like we're picking people. It's how you did on the charts.
Yes.
Y'all wanted The Weeknd. You kept streaming his songs, buying his songs, and listening to his songs on the radio.
Exactly. Numbers do not lie. And he is followed by DaBaby with 11 nods, then Pop Smoke with 10, and Gabby Barrett with 9.
That's a little bit surprising. Were you surprised?
I think so, too. You might have noticed the surprise at the end of my saying that. Gabby Barrett. I love Gabby Barrett, and I love that she's getting that huge recognition at, not just a country genre award show, at a mainstream award show. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Very exciting news that we announced the day after the finalists came out is that Nick Jonas is hosting the show for the very first time.
Friend of the podcast.
Friend of the podcast, Nick Jonas. And he will be following in the footsteps of his fellow voice coach, Kelly Clarkson, so I'm sure she'll be giving him lots of tips.
Now, do you think Nick is going to do what Kelly did, where Kelly had opened the shows with like a mega medley where she performed all of these hit songs together? Do you think Nick is going to do that this year?
I mean, that was fun. So, if he took note that people liked that. I mean, but of course, Kelly does Kellyoke. It's basically like Kellyoke for the BBMAs. But Nick obviously can do that.
Yeah.
He's pretty funny. I'm not sure if you've watched him on The Voice at all, but he gives like some good zingers to Blake. I feel like it might go a little bit funnier, like a little more stand-up-y. He's, or something.
Well, yeah, because he has like a very sort of like stand-up wry, but he's like sense of humor. He's also like a good actor,
yeah,
too. So I think that will absolutely help him immeasurably for his hosting, yes, duties.
Yes, I love this choice, though. That should be fun. And then just announced today, breaking news, just announced Tuesday, Pink will receive the Icon Award and perform at the show. Some huge names in the past have gotten that award. And she said in her statement to Billboard that, she kind of is mind blown that she's being mentioned in the same breath as, Cher, Garth Brooks, Stevie Wonder, all these huge, huge names. So the show will air live from the Microsoft Theater in Los Angeles.
Crazy.
Which is weird.
Second year in a row also, in L.A.
I was going to say, also, if you listen to the show, you know that Keith and I typically jet off to Las Vegas every year and go to the show. So now 2 years running, it's happening right in our backyard. Yeah, I don't even think I'll be jetting to downtown Los Angeles.
Are we allowed to be there? I don't think we're allowed to be there.
Actually, I don't know. We'll keep you posted closer to whether there's any sort of role that we will be playing on site. But I'm guessing we're still playing it safe here with COVID, that they don't need extra bodies hanging around. So, I could definitely do coverage from right here. I've been in a lot of virtual press rooms this year, and I might be in our own virtual press room. We don't know yet. So we shall see. If I didn't say this, it airs on Sunday, May 23rd at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, live on both coasts. Beautiful thing on NBC. And yeah, we'll be tuning in probably along with you guys this year, but we'll be covering it for sure. So stay tuned to the podcast for more.
And by the way, we haven't mentioned this, but I think we kind of suggested as much. The Billboard Music Awards finalists are basically essentially a reflection of how well people did on the charts in the past year. Katie, yeah. I think we have some specific wording about this, right?
We do. So the BBMA finalists and then the winners are based on key fan interactions with music, which includes album and digital song sales, streaming, radio airplay, and social engagement as tracked by Billboard and its data partners, including MRC Data. So this year's awards are based on the chart period from March 21st, 2020 through April 3rd, 2021. So it's all right there. You saw what has happened on this last year of charts. That's what, you know, the biggest people on that show are going to be.
Somehow, it's also, in a way, the most anticlimactic, award show. Because
there are some surprises, I guess, because true. It's not like fans are tracking exactly, like, you know, the consumption of that, you know, of that period of the year.
But, you haven't been on Twitter lately, have you?
Okay, yes. I guess there are some fans who do.
Well, speaking of award shows, in other music awards news, on April 30th, the Recording Academy announced that it was disbanding its nominations review committees, except in so-called craft categories. More on that in a second. If you have been following the Grammy Awards for years, or even only recently, you've likely heard of these committees existing and how they've been rather controversial.
Yeah, I mean, most specifically, obviously, we've heard from The Weeknd, who was snubbed entirely by the Recording Academy and got zero nominations, and he called the Grammys corrupt and demanded transparency.
His words, not ours.
Yes.
So we thought we'd discuss what this new change by the Recording Academy actually means, why these nomination review committees even existed in the first place, and what could happen at next year's Grammys in light of this change.
And who better to talk to about this than Billboard's own awards editor, Paul Grine, who covers all things awards for Billboard and is the expert when it comes to all things Grammys. Of course, on Monday, he wrote a lengthy analysis piece on Billboard.com about disbanding the committees and that you could definitely read that. But instead, why don't you listen to Paul talk to us right now? And then you can go read that afterward. So welcome, Paul, to the podcast.
Thank you. It is an honor. It's my first time and I listen to it every week, so I'm glad to be on it.
Yay. It's definitely not your first time on a Billboard podcast, just this Billboard podcast.
That's true.
So, Paul, it might be surprising to listeners to know that the thousands of voting members of the Recording Academy, who are artists of all sorts and professionals in the music business, actually haven't had the final say in who the nominees are at the Grammy Awards. So how has the process worked so far?
For the past 26 years, the voting members of the Recording Academy submitted their votes, and then they were reviewed by a nominations review committee that would look, in the case of the big four categories, at their top 20 choices. They were presented to that committee in alphabetical order, so even the committee members had no way of knowing what was number one and what was number 20. If, you know, I presume Blinding Lights was in the top 20 last year, it had to have been. And if they knew it was, you know, very high on the list, number one, two, or three, they might have been more inclined to vote for it. If they were voting blind and had no idea, they still should have voted for it. But it makes the omission a little more understandable. I just think it's so great that it's going back to the voters. And even if the voters make mistakes, it's real. It's honest, and it's what the 14,000 voting members wanted.
Right.
It's not what a group of about 20 insiders sitting around a table being very, very calculating and image conscious, you know, thought would burnish the Grammy image. is much, to me, much more honest and forthright. And even though there will be mistakes, there always are in all awards. Oscars, Emmys, Grammys, Tonys, every award show, you know, makes mistakes. But that's part of the fun of it. You don't expect perfection, but you do expect, as the Weeknd said, transparency and honesty. And I think that's a move forward.
Well, Paul, just to clarify, so in the big four categories, there would be the top 20 vote getters. So, like, you know, there could be hundreds of possible contenders in a particular category. And then the thousands of voting members vote from those hundreds. And here are the top 20 for Album of the Year. And it is presented alphabetically to this committee. And then that committee, do they re-vote, like, sort of in a blind vote? Like, they put, like, their votes into a hat, basically, so they don't know? Or do they just sit there openly discussing it in a room full of 20 people? How did that
actually discuss it in a room? And what I'm told is that often you can get a feel for who's probably definitely going to be nominated and who really doesn't have a chance because of listening to the voices. I've never been in that room. But I'm told that, and common sense tells you that you can probably have a pretty good idea if you're listening and know how to listen.
That's interesting. I thought it was actually they would vote from those top 20. I didn't realize that it was a little bit more conversational.
It is conversational. They listen and then debate, discuss. People will stand up for, advocate for their favorites. If something has no advocates in the room, you know, you kind of know it's not going to go too far.
I guess part of me thought, oh, well, that's maybe how The Weeknd didn't get nominated for album, record, or song, because if it was just this committee voting in a secret vote of those 20 possible contenders, in theory, they could have all voted for Jacob Collier or Black Pumas and not thought, oh, I need to vote for The Weeknd because clearly The Weeknd's popular and everyone else is going to vote for him. But if this is actually those 20 people talking out loud, then they certainly would have had to have mentioned the word The Weeknd in that discussion. So that's really surprising to me.
I think what happened was probably they thought the blinding lights won't become one iota more popular if it receives a Grammy nomination for Record of the Year. It has achieved everything a record can achieve. And why not give this huge break to a record like the Black Pumas, which was not a hit? And I see a little bit of logic to that, but I don't think that's the role of the Grammys. I don't think that should have been their objective, is let's help break an act, let's be champions for these lesser known artists. Their role should be strictly to reward the best records of the year. And they shouldn't be penalized if they were giant blockbuster hits, nor should they be automatically nominated because they were giant blockbuster hits. But I think Blinding Lights was both a, you know, commercial smash and a really good record. I've heard it, you know, we've all heard it hundreds of times, and it never gets old. It still sounds good.
So, Paul, looking at other big award shows, will the Grammys voting process now be more similar to the Oscars voting process? Like, do they leave their top prizes completely in the hands of their voters? You know, what are the pitfalls that the Oscars have faced with sort of their voting process, because they've come under fire in recent years. Oscar's so white and all of that, and they've been trying to do a lot of outreach to build their membership. So, you know, I don't know, pontificate on that if you can.
The Grammys going forward will be more like the Oscars, which do not have nominations review committees. They are picked by the Oscar voters. The CMA Awards, the biggest award in country music, is also unreviewed. And the Grammys, until 1995, were completely voted on by the membership. So when Stevie Wonder won three Album of the Year awards in the 70s, and when Sgt. Pepper's won Album of the Year, even though the Grammys were, rock was the furthest thing from their minds, but even then, in that year, in 1967, they could recognize that that was a brilliant album and needed to win.
It might be sort of a naive question, but it seems like, I mean, because you wrote in your story how these review committees started in, I think, the jazz category in 1989, and it didn't expand to the big four categories, album, record, song, and new artist, until 1994 or 1995, as kind of an answer to, there was some general dismay that there was a year where Tony Bennett and the Three Tenors were both nominated for Album of the Year, when the top of the charts were being crowded by alternative acts and hip hop acts and a lot of, young skewing, youthful, progressive music. And so I thought it was interesting how the Academy thought, okay, well, the way to solve this is to not expand our membership, or maybe that was part of it, but here's the answer. We'll just pick what we think is best. When it seems like the answer should be, you know what, we need to get a better representation of the entire recording industry who are voting, because it seems like it would be counterintuitive if you give all this power internally to these committees instead of in the hands of the voters. Doesn't that actually make it less enticing for you to actually want to pay to become a voting member? Because then you think that my vote doesn't really count. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, it's an excellent point. I think Mike Green, who was the president and CEO at the Recording Academy at the time, thought there was kind of an emergency and something had to be done immediately. I think you were absolutely right that a better solution, even though it would probably have taken a few years, 3 to 5 years, to make a meaningful change in the membership of the Academy. That's obviously the way to fix the problem, not to at the very last stage, alter the results. You make a good point, Keith.
Thank you.
You mentioned in your article Louis Capaldi as someone who might have suffered because of those committees. Who are some other artists that you think might have benefited if this rule change had been made, more recently? If it's maybe Ed Sheeran is the first one that I thought of.
Yeah, Ed Sheeran wasn't nominated for Album, Record, or Song of the Year in the year of Divide and Shape of You. Because he came the year after Adele won all the big three awards, beating Beyonce in all three of those categories, which was controversial. And the Academy thought, we're not going down that road again. But if the voters had wanted Ed Sheeran, the voters should get what they want. It should be up to the voters. And now,
right,
once again, will be up to the voters. The thing with Louis Capaldi, who was not nominated for Best New Artist a little more than a year ago, even though he had a sensational year, I believe the committee thought he was a kind of a middle of the road pop artist. We'd much rather have hipper people like Tank and the Bangas and Yola and the Black Pumas, and so they went that way. But if a Louis Capaldi has the votes and the support of the members, he should be nominated.
And it's going to be, I feel like it all comes down to how fascinating the next nominations are going to be, like how different they are, or maybe they won't be. I don't know. It's going to say everything about this decision. So we can talk about it all day, but it feels like that's when we really have to wait for the results of all this, basically. But The Weeknd, he affected change pretty quickly, I would say. And you also written this in your articles as well, but the Academy thinks that they have done that work now in diversifying their membership too. So this voter base is not going to make some of those same decisions that the early 90s voter base, would have made. So, yes. Yeah. All right. Well, Paul,
I feel a little bad that Tony Bennett and the three tenors always get dragged through the mud. And nobody's disputing that Tony Bennett's a great artist. The argument is just that he, an album of him singing his classic songs probably shouldn't have won album of the year. Traditional pop album would have probably been enough. And it did end up too.
And I think at the end of the day, and maybe you both agree with me here, it's like, at the end of the day, next year, it'll be literally just what the voting members want. Mm-hmm. For them, basically. So then at that point, what if people don't like those nominations?
We can guarantee you that there will be controversies. There will be artists that aren't nominated. And there will be people who are nominated who, you know, people say, why was he nominated? That is a given with all award shows. You know, it's a fake concept that there are eight and only eight albums or singles or songs or new artists who are worthy of being nominated. There are, you know, dozens. You were saying there are hundreds of contenders. There are over 1,000 contenders in the big three categories. So it's extremely competitive, and you can get it down to, you know, maybe 20 or so finalists, and the getting it to eight, and before a few years ago it was five, is brutal, because, you know, something's going to come in, you know, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, just miss it, and, you know, everyone will say they were snubbed, you know, they just fell a little bit short.
Well, feels like the perfect note to end on. Paul, we really appreciate you making your Pop Shop debut. Hopefully not the last time that you join us. So thank you so much for talking with us about this today.
Thanks.
And now it's time for the chart stat of the week. Na 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 come on. I like it. 10 years ago on the Billboard Hot 100 chart, much like this week, a song jumped to number one off the strength of a Late in the Game remix, as Rihanna's S&M, powered by a new remix featuring Britney Spears, jumped from number two to number one on the Hot 100 dated April 30th, 2011. And, like this week with Ariana Grande, Spears was added to the chart credit on the song, so S&M will forever be counted as one of Britney's number one Hot 100 hits. And speaking of the Billboard Music Awards earlier, as we did, the one and only time Rihanna and Britney Spears performed S&M together live was at the 2011 Billboard Music Awards, where the pair opened the show. So there you have it. A flashback to 10 years ago when another new remix propelled a song to number one on the Hot 100, Rihanna's S&M featuring Britney Spears.
I want to give like applause for how perfect that chart stat was. Like, it really hit a lot of bases of this week.
Thanks. Yes, thank you. I feel like we have done the Pop Shop for so long that I have probably done a chart stat about this particular song before. So,
speaking of Twitter, we'll hear from the one person who remembered that exact chart stat.
I guess I shouldn't have volunteered that piece of information.
Right.
What song should we go out on, Katie?
Oof. Gosh. Oh, can we just go out on Gabby Barrett, since we're so excited for her doing so well in the BBMA finalists. I was going to say nominees, finalists.
Sure. Which song by Gabby Barrett?
I Hope. That's the jam.
Her big hit, the one with Charlie or the one without Charlie Puth?
Oh, let's do the one with Charlie. That's fun. He's a friend of the podcast, as we often say. So there you go.
God love the Puth. All right. See you guys next time.
Bye.